Welcome to the Phil Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:33 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is May 3rd, and I thought we'd kick off with the RBA because they raised rates by 25 basis points today, and the market reacted to that as if it was a surprise, or that they raised it more than anticipated, because I guess the last time they raised rates was an awfully long time ago, if we go all the way back to 2010. So 12 years of the only way that interest rates have gone as down is a really prolonged period. And of course, it has resulted in a great deal of leverage being created within the Australian economy, and most particularly within the housing sector. And every time I've been to Australia, it's certainly been a topic of conversation that's come up, has always been about the outlook for houses and property. And a large percentage of mortgages are interest only, and a good number more are floating rate. And then, to the extent that you have fixed rate mortgages, they tend to be rather short fixes of in the region of about 5 years. So then that leaves the population very exposed to interest rates, and interest rates are beginning to just start moving. So this isn't going to become problematic now. And a good number of people are already sitting on positive equity, so they're not going to be too bothered. But to the extent that people have to then either step up into paying back the principal on an interest-only mortgage, the repayment could rise by as much as 60%, or they have to refinance it, then their payment would go up as well. So then they become progressively more sensitive to interest rates. And at some point, there's a tipping point in the market for leverage, and people start to just decide that it's not worth it anymore and that it's time to sell. And at that point, you get a lot of property hitting the market at the same time. So I think it's also rather interesting to just pay attention to the ASX real estate sector, because it was down in here today on the back of the interest rate hike, and it failed to sustain the breakout at the beginning of this year, and that was right in the region of the peak from before the pandemic, and it pulled straight back down to break the sequence of higher reaction lows. So it's a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Then you have a period of right-hand extension, and it's pulling back once more. So this really does look like a type 2 top with right-hand extension. And it's going to have to hold the recent lows if that is if this trend is going to be sustained. Now, when we also look at the Australian dollar, well, it's also been pulling back, and it's right now in the region of 70 cents. So that's the lower side of the range, and there have been plenty of occasions over the last 7 years when 70 cents has offered support. So it did begin to rally earlier on today, but wasn't quite able to hold all of it. And a good part of the reason for that is because the RBA might be looking to raise rates, but the market has already priced in that the USA is going to raise rates faster than most other countries. Well, of course, then we're going to have the decision from the Bank of England tomorrow as well. And the pound is hovering here around 125. It does look likely that the Bank of England is going to hike rates and perhaps do so in a more aggressive manner than other currencies outside the USA. But nonetheless, the pound has really pulled back sharply over the course of the last month, and we do have a short-term oversold condition. So there is the scope for a recovery rally if the news is a bit more hawkish. But then if we do get a hawkish outcome which supports the currency, well, it's likely to take a toll on the stock market. And the FTSE 250 is right now in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And it dipped below it earlier this year, rebounded exceptionally impressively, but then rolled over again. Now, we're still in a corrective phase overall. And this is equally true of just about every stock market. But China offers us, I think, a perspective of what we might expect when the interest rate cycle rolls over again. So China's credit impulse is now clearly trending higher. So it bottomed at the end of last year, and then it wobbled a bit in the first quarter, but then it has rebounded really quite emphatically at the last update. And we can look at how cyclical this is over the course of the last 12 years. So we've had peaks in 2013, 2016, 2020, and then troughs that have all been pretty similar to one another. And usually, when the market troughs, well, then the stock market, or when the credit impulse troughs, then it generally tends to be benign for the stock market. So we can look at the low in 2018 and then potentially another low in here. And there was a significant low in 2013-14 as well. So this is an example of the deep sell-off in that the stock market responds to the draining of liquidity from the system. And we get politicians beginning to get antsy and panic about the extent of the pullback, and then they reverse course, even though prior to the reversal they are 100% committed to their suite of policies. When they decide to move in the opposite direction, then it can have a significant effect on asset prices. So the CSI 300 was well off its lows on Friday. It's not open this week until Thursday. And it's, I think, also worth just highlighting that at the end of last week, the Chinext index was also very deeply oversold and beginning to rally. Now, the H share index in Hong Kong reopened today, and the market was holding the big move that we had up from yesterday. And this is looking like a higher reaction low. So we've had a lengthy period of declines for the Chinese market, and this is a reasonably dynamic rebound from above the low in March, and it's suggesting that there is appetite for some risk taking. And of course, the Hang Seng is trade the China Enterprises Index is trading at a rather attractive valuation. It's got a PE in the middle single digits and a yield of over 3%. And in an environment where interest rates are rising and growth is being shunned, then there is a market for these types of instrument. I was looking today at some of the more consumer staple type companies. So Tesla, for example, has been going sideways for 7 years, well, nearly 8 years, and it's rebounding from the middle of the range. But I think it's the valuation is perhaps something that people will be paying attention to. It's trading on a price to sales ratio of 0.3. The cash generated to cash required is over 2, so there's no pressure on the dividend. And the debt to equity isn't particularly onerous. And then when we think about that dividend, well, it's in the region of about 3.9 if any special cash dividends are paid in the future. They might, or if they're not, they might be 3.3. Then a large number of the network owners for mobile phones have really not been doing especially well. And mostly that's because they're spending a lot of money on building out 5G and fiber optic cables, and they're not expected to be able to generate significant returns off those big investments for a number of years. But Vodafone has got a sequence of higher reaction lows within its base formation, and It has unwound all of the overextension relative to the 1,000-day moving average. Now, Vodafone is miles away from where its peaks have been in the past. But it does have the redeeming quality of a high dividend in the region of about 6%, and then low valuation with a price to sales ratio of about 1, and the price to book is less than 1. And they have plenty of cash to pay out. So, and obviously their dividend payout ratio is exceptionally high. So they're really returning most of their free cash to investors. Now, these are the types of companies that would become attractive in a value-oriented environment because they're pretty reliable assets and they have cash flows that are relatively well insulated from inflation because supermarkets raise prices all the time. And when you own the network for mobile phones, well, there's not an awful lot that people can do if they have to use the network. And I suspect that these types of plays are going to get more attention. Now, when we think about that, though, these are highly defensive. And generally speaking, when we think about the cycle of performance in the stock market, well, growth does well in a low interest rate environment. But despite the fact that the Nasdaq's in positive territory in here today, this is still looking like a bearish chart overall. Now it's short-term oversold, so we might get some steadier action. And of course, we have the Federal Reserve's interest rate decision in here tomorrow. And that is likely to be a source of volatility. So there's not a lot of trading going on right now. We can certainly also think about the flash crash that occurred yesterday in Sweden, less in terms of how much it affected sentiment, but as a symptom of just how sensitive markets are to flow right now. So these types of events tend to be cumulative when it in terms of investor psychology. If this trend is going to turn around, then we'll need to see clear dynamic moves, but most particularly, it's going to have to sustain a move back above the 200-day moving average. And we're still a fair way from that. And growth also can be measured by the performance of Bitcoin. And Bitcoin prices continue to languish here below the 40,000 level, but also encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. And we haven't seen Bitcoin prices doing that since 2018. So this is not a bullish environment either. Now, we can zoom in and think about the sequence of higher reaction lows that's been evident since January, and arguably it's being broken right now. So it's looking increasingly likely that there could be a downside surprise for the growth sector, and that's obviously going to be very much influenced by just how hawkish central banks come out tomorrow. I think the market is beginning to anticipate that the Bank of England is going to be hawkish and that the Federal Reserve is probably going to be more hawkish. But if they really are determined to raise rates aggressively, then it's going to slow growth. And that is, in fact, what they want. They want to try and kill off demand. There's nothing that central banks can do to make more oil flow. But what they can do is try and inhibit people from buying it. So Brent crude was in positive territory initially and then was down $2 in here today. Now we're starting to get a bit of a triangular pattern evolving here. We have an incremental sequence of higher reaction lows. We have a clear sequence of lower rally highs. So the trading band is getting progressively narrower, and when this is completed, the move is going to be emphatic. And If growth slows down, then the potential is that oil prices will fall instead of rise. Natural gas prices were above $8 for a time today, and I gave up some of that advance. But the more important point is that it's holding the breakout from the exceptionally lengthy base formation. So natural gas is certainly in play here, and there's the potential that we're going to have significant upside. What's quite different today to the spikes that we had between 2000 and 2008 is that they were primarily weather related, and this is not a weather related event. Rather, the underperformance of natural gas over a lengthy period contributed to less drilling and more sources of new demand to pick up the arbitrage. And now we're seeing an increasingly globalized market. So natural gas is becoming globally fungible, and that means that prices across the globe are going to become levelized as well, in much the same way as the differential between Brent and WTI is. It does still exist, but it seldom gets particularly wide. So then we're still in this sort of environment where investors are willing to bet that interest rates are going to go up, but they haven't really caught up with stock prices yet. And gold has pulled back sharply over the last 2 weeks and is now right in the region of 1850, which approximates the upper side of the underlying range in the region of the 200-day moving average. And this is, I think, would be an ideal area for it to find support. But we need more than a $2 advance to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The 1,000-day moving average would be the lower side of the range and coinciding with the $1,670 area. And I would be really quite surprised to see a decline to that level. And if we do get that, I'll be increasing my positions. I'm also tempted to increase here, but I'd like to see an upward dynamic, and I'm willing to pay $20 more before I really commit to increasing my position. Certainly, I think my other trading has been feeding my gold habit over the last few months. But certainly, the Nasdaq is, I guess, salving that particular wound. When we then think about bonds, we've had a really profound advance in 10-year yields. And this is not just 10-year yields, of course, but there's been incredible commonality in bonds everywhere falling. But we're in the region of 3%. It's been an area of resistance for yields and support for prices on multiple occasions over the last decade, and the yield has raced to get here. So the race to get to this level has been about pricing in interest rate hikes. And at some point, then the bond market is going to start pricing in lower growth. And then the question will be, will the lower growth coincide with moderating inflation, or will we have stagflation? But we're still in a corrective phase in stocks. This has been an acute correction in the bond markets. And then, of course, the big beneficiary has been the dollar. And the dollar is also right at the upper side of its range on the dollar index and was a little bit weaker in here today. If bond yields start to come back down and the dollar moderates, then that's going to act like fuel for a stock market rebound. And when everything falls together, or when everything trends in the same direction for a prolonged period, then the change in one trend is likely to have an effect on others. And we do have short-term oversold conditions. So, in order to be profoundly bearish, one really does have to adhere to the stagflation outcome. And it's certainly a possibility, but it's not the only possibility. Then we can think about there's really two big arguments. One is really about monetary policy, and I think that's the less thorny one because we know how central banks have tended to respond in the past. The bigger question is what happens with Ukraine? And the longer that the war goes on for, the greater the pressure is going to come on various parts of the supply chain. And it stretches from the wheat market to neon gas and semiconductors. So wheat prices are beginning to pause, are certainly starting to come back down. I would rather think it's unlikely that wheat is going to decline in a very meaningful fashion until we get a lot more planting taking place to compensate for the loss of planting in Ukraine. So this is looking more like a consolidation rather than a peak. And the semiconductors sector is also was a little steadier in here today, but has broken its uptrend and will need to sustain a move back above the 200-day moving average. But importantly, it's really going to now be a question not so much about continued demand, although certainly there's been a massive inventory build, and eventually companies will stop ordering because they'll have enough. But then it will be really about the capability of semiconductor companies, particularly in Taiwan, to continue to build when some of the raw materials that they rely on are in short supply. So Taiwan Semiconductor has already broken downwards, and this really does look like an accelerated peak in early 2021, then a period of right-hand extension and another failed upside break and massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So we're looking at a hybrid top. And it has a lot of work to do to demonstrate support and to be able to rebuild confidence. So we've had a lot of trends rolling over, whereas in the defense and then in the commodities sector. So I will come back to what I was originally starting to talk about was technology does well in low interest rate environments. During a recovery, as interest rates begin to rise, then commodities tend to do well. So we've had that. We've had a really big advance in commodities, and copper prices are continuing to hover here around the 450 area, but they did break downwards last week. And now the question is it going to hold around these areas, or is it going to break lower? And will that be a response to slowing global growth? And when growth does slow, then commodities don't generally tend to do very well. So that's why it's important to pay attention to what's happening with oil. And then defensives tend to go on a really impressive rally because they start to attract interests from everything else. And when they eventually peak, well, then you really are in a big bear market. So then the question, of course, is going to be about interest rates. And we're just not there yet in terms of politicians and central banks getting worried about the stock market. And until we're worried about the stock market and everybody is worried about a recession or about deflation or about just massive liabilities politically from millions of people losing the value of their pensions, then we're likely to then see, in response to any one of those worries, a change and more money supplied to the market. But we're just not there yet. This is still the corrective phase overall. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.